This is May 29th, 2004 in San Antonio, Texas at the Army Nurse Corps Association Convention, and I'm with John Scherner, and I'm Kara Buick. So we'll just let you start with where you were born and raised.
Born in a small town outside of Rochester, New York called Mount Morris, New York. Mm-hmm. I have a twin brother and a younger brother, mm-hmm. and I was raised by a single parent, my mother, mm-hmm. In a typical childhood in a small town. It was very, very secure as far as being able to roam around and do things, very, very physically oriented outdoor activities, mm-hmm. played sports in high school, and did all those things, uh-huh. not any problems. I was probably an average to above average high school student, probably an average athletic person. Mm-hmm. I graduated from high school when I was 16. Back then, uh-huh. in New York, you could start kindergarten at an earlier age. Mm-hmm. And so I was 16 in a couple of months when I graduated from high school. And I really was not an outstanding student. I didn't have a scholarship to any place. We didn't have enough money to go to a college anyway. My guidance counselor suggested going to nursing school, which was located about 10 miles from where I live, and essentially applied and got accepted and went to nursing school about 10 miles from where I lived. A lot of the people in my town that I grew up were worked at the school and at the hospital and the institution, and male nurses were common there, perhaps more common than in other parts of the country. And so that's why I went to a nursing school for 3 years. I was a total of 30 students started, 2 males and 28 females, and 20 graduated, 2 males graduated, and 18 females graduated. I started nursing school in 1964, in September 1964, and graduated in September 1967. Mm-hmm. And during my sophomore year, 1966, the draft was prevalent at that time. If you didn't have a college deferment, you were drafted. One of the things that happened to people who were in my nursing school prior to when they graduated, they had not signed up for the military. There was a gap from the time that you graduated from nursing school where you took your state board license, mm-hmm. and the time you became a registered nurse was 3 or 4 months. So during that 3 or 4 month period of time, if your college deferment ended, and so you could be drafted as an enlisted person, even though you were not trained as an RN, mm-hmm. that happened to several people in my nursing class. And one of the ways that people got around that is if you joined the Army prior to graduation. And they had a program back then called the Army Student Nurse Program, mm-hmm. which essentially is kind of the forerunner of ROTC. Mm-hmm. You became an enlisted soldier, PFC. You were given $100 a month stipend, and you were stationed at your school of nursing rather than an Army base. But then when you graduated and took your state boards, then you were commissioned as a second lieutenant in the Army Nurse Corps. And that's the route that I decided to take. Was originally going to plan to stay 2 years. And so I graduated in September of 1967. I entered active duty in February of 68 and came to Fort Sam Houston, Texas for my basic training, which was 8 weeks at that time. Mm-hmm. And then my first assignment in the Army was at Fort Ord, California, as a med-surg nurse working evening and nights. After 5 months of being there, I was received orders to Vietnam. I went to Vietnam in October of 1968 to a hospital called 24th Evacuation Hospital in Long Binh, which is in the third corps of southern part of Vietnam. It was about 30 miles from Saigon, and it's the 24th Evacuation Hospital. It was essentially a neuromaxillofacial hospital for the lower part of Vietnam. Anybody that had, we took all injuries, but if there are any injuries that were related to the head or the face, it came to the 24th Evacuation Hospital. We took care of them there. I was originally assigned for the first 2 months to a medicine ward where we took care of malaria patients and tropical fever patients and patients who had essentially tropical diseases. And after 2 months, I was asked by the chief nurse to go to work in the emergency room. So I spent the last 10 months of my duty in Vietnam in the emergency room at the 24th Evacuation Hospital. Mm-hmm. And it was a very busy place. Mm-hmm. We worked 12 hours a day, 7 days a week, worked either day, 7 to 7, or evenings 7 p.m. to 7 a.m., usually with one nurse and one corpsman. During the day, we had a general medical officer who was there to handle anything that came through the door. After 7 o'clock at night, the general medical officer went home, and the nurse and the corpsman were there physically. If there were problems that we could handle, then we called a physician. If it was a head injury, we called the neurosurgeon. If it was a belly wound, we called the general surgeon. If it was an orthopedic wound, we called the orthopedic surgeon. So we were essentially the first line of the first people that the soldiers saw when they came through the emergency room door. Mm-hmm. And then they were triaged to different places in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And that was my experience there. It was fairly rewarding from the standpoint that it provided a very, very good foundation for me for the rest of my military career. It gave me confidence that I could do things that I never thought I could do before, that I could be a team player, and that people could trust me with fairly big assignments from that standpoint. I stayed there for till October 1969, and came back to the States. It was a little bit different, just like everybody else experiences. I came in through Oakland, mm-hmm. and we were told to not to wear our uniforms once we got off the base, and had dealt with that little, not as much as a lot of other people have, but with the experience of not being really respected by the mm-hmm. population or the citizens in the United States. But it didn't really cause a major problem with me. I was stationed at Walter Reed Army Medical Center after mm-hmm. that. I was head nurse of a neurosurgical ENT ward as the first lieutenant. I was promoted to captain. At that time, I decided that I really didn't want to stay in floor nursing, per se, mm-hmm. Just because I felt that even when you went, after I spent the day there, I went home, came back the next day, all these problems that occurred at evenings and nights were there for waiting for me. I would get called at home to deal with a lot of the issues that came on board, and I just decided that I would rather want to be responsible for my own action and so forth. I decided to go to anesthesia school, mm-hmm. nurse anesthesia school. I met several nurse anesthetists in Vietnam, mm-hmm. And felt that they were kind of role models and mentors for me. So I applied and got accepted to anesthesia school, and went to anesthesia school, two-phase program. Phase one was mainly didactic for 6 months at William Beaumont Army Medical Center in El Paso, Texas. And the last 12 months is mainly clinical, some didactic, but mainly clinical. And I came back to Walter Reed Army Medical Center to do my clinical. And then I was stationed in Hawaii for 4 years as a staff nurse anesthetist. I at that time was thinking about getting out of the Army. I realized the Army was probably the only way that I was going to get any education. A lot of my friends who got out of the Army went back to work as an anesthetist, never really got any more education as far as a BS degree or a master's degree, because they were busy working and making money and so forth. I decided I wanted to get an education in the military. The military afforded that to me. Mm-hmm. So I stayed in Hawaii 4 years, went to Fort Polk, Louisiana for about 2 years, a very, very small hospital. Very independent practice. We had an anesthesiologist during the day, but we had no anesthesiologist at nighttime and on call. And applied for long-term civilian schooling. And the Army selected me to go to school, and I went to Medical College of Georgia for their Pathways program, which is a year. Received my BSN. I got stationed in Fort Huachuca, Arizona. Became a supervisor, head nurse. Spent about 15 months there, and I got set to go back to my master's training, my master's in nursing and administration and education at University of Texas at El Paso. Mm-hmm. And I stayed there for for about, it took me 15 months to get my master's degree, stayed at El Paso for 2 months, and got selected to be an instructor in the nursing anesthesia program here in Fort Sam Houston at the Med Center and School, and spent 9 years teaching, mm-hmm. and eventually became the director of the program. And then I went to Korea for a year as the supervisor of a 21st Evacuation Hospital in Korea. Came back and was the supervisor of Brooke Army Medical Center for the nurse anesthetist and also the consultant for the Surgeon General for nurse anesthesia. Then I retired in 97. Mm-hmm. And since then I've worked in two positions. I was a staff nurse anesthetist at University of Texas Health Science Center here in San Antonio. And then 3 years ago I was offered the position of the chief nurse anesthetist at the VA here in San Antonio. That's where I've been ever since. So the majority of my military career was spent in anesthesia. I spent 2.5, 3 years as a nurse, a general duty nurse, an emergency room nurse, and then the rest of my time was spent either getting an education or being a nurse anesthetist. Mm-hmm. And so, and probably when I look back at the turning points in my career, the foundation that I was, or the opportunity I was provided and the foundation I received in Vietnam was probably one of the strongest building blocks that I can think of as far as helping me in development of my career from mm-hmm. where I am at this point in time. Mm-hmm. For me, it was a you hate to say good experience, but it was a very good learning experience for me mm-hmm. from a lot of different standpoints. I was 21 years old when I was there. I've been in nursing for about 8 months to a year, but it really solidified and formed, and it was my the building block for the rest of my career. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I've often thought about is a lot of the people that I was in, went to basic with me in 1968 and were in Vietnam with me, I knew fairly well, and several of those individuals have written books and had problems dealing with the things that they saw in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And I've never really consciously ever thought that I had really developed any major psychological or any major problems from that, mm-hmm. mainly because I think I stayed in the military and I had a lot of people who understood where I was coming from and where I'd come from and were really pretty big supporting blocks and so forth. So I was able to talk a lot about the experiences mm-hmm. and really came, I have a hard time understanding that I was in the same place at the same time these individuals were, and I experienced the same things, but they had some issues that I didn't have. Mm-hmm. And most of the people that have written the books and so forth have been female. There have been very few mm-hmm. males that I try to read a lot of those books because I'm interested in it. Mm-hmm. So they maybe internalized it more than I did, mm-hmm. or I internalized it in a different way than they did. And we've talked about it, we've met many different times along the way. We've experienced the same things, but we manifested it in different ways.
Mm-hmm. And which books have you read?
There's one book, it's called The Rainforest. Rainforest, I can't remember exactly the title of it. Mm-hmm. It was written by an infantry officer from a town that was 13 miles from where I was. And he dedicated the book to my cousin. I had a first cousin that was killed in Vietnam. And so I've read that book, and I think it's Pieces of My Soul. I can't think if that's the correct title. It's a synopsis of 14 or 15 different nurse anesthetists, different nurses that were in Vietnam. Mm-hmm. Two of them were at the 21st Evacuation Hospital when I was there, mm-hmm. Donna Collin and Kay Johnston, mm-hmm. Who did develop some problems psychologically after their mm-hmm. experience in Vietnam. They both left the military service mm-hmm. soon after they their experience in Vietnam. And again, we were in the same hospital, the same mm-hmm. same environment, but they did have some problems dealing with it. Now, when I return this, I'll write down the titles of the books for you.
Okay.
I can't remember them right now, but there's a couple other books that have come out. I think Dina McGookin has written a book that had that tells of her experiences, mm-hmm. and you know, again, some of them are similar, but some of them, mm-hmm. are, they're interpreted differently, mm-hmm. from my standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And so when you joined up in the first, you know, when you joined up with the student nurse program, mm-hmm. the money was a big factor?
The main factor, motivating factor, was that I did not want to go to nursing school in the time from I graduated in September until the time I took my state board. I did not want to be drafted, uh-huh. as an enlisted person. I would rather have been drafted as an officer. So that's the main reason, uh-huh. that I chose the Army Student Nurse Program. The money was fine. I mean, it was an extra $100 that I didn't have. And also that time that I spent as a senior nursing student, but I was also in the Army, counts for paying retirement later on. Mm-hmm. So there was another benefit. If I decided to stay in the Army, or that would count as towards paying in retirement. The main reason was to enter the Army. I knew I was going to have to go one way or the other, because I was 20 years old, and Vietnam was still a fairly major conflict, and that was the best way to enter, as you said, in my terms.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you have any thoughts when you joined that this might be a career?
No, I thought that after 2 years I would. I got married in and I came in the Army in 1968. And I got married in 1970, and so my wife and I both agreed that we should go to the anesthesia program in the Army. It was very, very. It's got a good reputation, and then we do our payback, and then we get out and go back to New York. Once I got in, I was given a lot of responsibility. I was able to progress very satisfactorily and made lots of friends. One thing led to another. And the main reason why I stayed in, again, is because of the educational opportunities. I came in, to come in on my terms, but then the Army offered me some things. They educated me from an anesthesia standpoint, from a BSN standpoint, from a master's standpoint. If I decided to go for a PhD, I may have gotten that, but mm-hmm. it wasn't something that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I provided them a service and they provided me an education. Mm-hmm. So it was mutually beneficial for both of us, I think.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you said that there were a lot of male nurses from your hometown.
There were a lot of male, yeah, there were the town, as a matter of fact, my father-in-law was a male nurse.
Uh-huh.
And he, surgeon, he was a male nurse, but during World War II, they didn't have commissioned officers as nurses. So he was a male nurse, but he got commissioned as a medic.
Uh-huh.
My wife's uncle was a nurse anesthetist, mm-hmm. in the town that I grew up. Mm-hmm. Several of the people that, kids that I played with, their fathers were male nurses. So it was not an unusual thing. And I don't think the stigma of being a male nurse, uh-huh. back then was probably more prevalent than it is today, but it wasn't much of a stigma in that town, because the hospital I went to was a state institution for mentally retarded and epileptic, mm-hmm. but they have school of nursing associated with it. And the school of nursing, the nurses, the student nurses back then, it was a 3-year diploma graduate, essentially to provide a cheap labor. Mm-hmm. And you got educated.
Mm-hmm.
And so nursing, the care of a patient, was something that we did from the first day we got there. So by the time I graduated, it was no big thing to go into the Army and take care of 30 patients. We've been doing it as students all along the way.
Uh-huh.
So that problem never occurred from my perspective anyways, and the other people's perspective that I knew that stayed in the Army or came into the Army from similar type programs, mm-hmm. we had no problems adapting to what the military wanted us to do. So there is always a little bit of stigma of being a male nurse, no matter even today's society when we have a lot more of them, a lot of people older in life are going into nursing and so forth. A lot of infantry officers and other people are changing careers. Probably that was the back of my mind,
mm-hmm.
People are going to think as far as going to nursing. But once in my own little town in my hospital area, it's not a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Did you, in any other position you were at, or any other town, maybe face that, or was it different because you were in the military?
I think it was different because of the military. I mean, mm-hmm. I, again, the military, General Dusters, we we've always had a higher predominance of males mm-hmm. in the military as compared to when I went to nursing school. Probably 2 to 3% of the nurses were males. Mm-hmm. When I went to the Army, we were 25%, 22%. So we were, they provided very, very good role models for me, mm-hmm. Both in my hometown and in the military, as far as males go.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting, because I've always wondered, is it kind of that time when you're starting to switch. Nursing is normally thought of as something a woman
right.
does, and then you're in the 60s and you get the women's movement and people saying, well, women can do things other than be a teacher or a hairdresser or a nurse,
right.
and you've got men coming into the field. And
I think there was some stigma. I think we dealt with it. That, mm-hmm. There was always safety in numbers. Unfortunately, in my nursing school, we only had 2 males,
mm-hmm.
and so it was a little bit, you automatically stuck out.
Mm-hmm.
28 females and 2 males, we were always kind of the oddball out. But part of our training program, we all went to New York City for a year to do a year of general surgery, med-surg, nursing at a big hospital. That was part of our rotation. And there was like 6 other schools. So when we got there, there were 18 males and probably 250 nurses, but the males were all on one floor, and a lot of them had prior military experiences as medics and so forth. So, he felt fairly comfortable,
uh-huh.
and it was. I can't say I had really any bad problems from that standpoint,
uh-huh.
because there's always safety in numbers, I guess.
Uh-huh.
Very comfortable environment.
Uh-huh. Had you thought much about the war before you went?
Not really. I mean, it was something that. I knew was there, and I knew I was going to have to face one way or the other. If I hadn't gone, my twin brother was a year behind me. He had some eye problems. He had some eye surgery, so he was missed a lot of school. So he was a year behind me. He graduated a year after I did, and he went directly into the Air Force. And he was in Vietnam the same time I was for about a 3-month period of time.
Mm-hmm.
If I hadn't gone to nursing school, I probably would have joined the Army mm-hmm. or the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what would have happened. After that,
mm-hmm.
Did not think a lot about it, and I thought a little bit more about it when I came after joined the Army. But when I came to basic, there were two categories of people: people that came into the Army and volunteered to go to Vietnam, and people who came in the Army and didn't volunteer. Well, the way it worked out, people volunteered and people who didn't volunteer end up about the same time going to Vietnam. So it really didn't make that much difference. I knew I'd probably go eventually. I thought more about it, and my cousin was killed July 12th. He was an infantry soldier in the 9th Infantry Division in the Mekong Delta.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after that, in July 12th, probably in August, I got orders to go to Vietnam. That's when I really, July 12th was probably a significant impact on me as far as realizing that I was going to go. But also before that, at Fort Ord, California, I took care of a lot of soldiers returning from Vietnam. So that was another reminder that I'm probably going to have to go
mm-hmm.
eventually. And it turned out I did. And I was a little bit apprehensive about going, not so much from safety for the most part. The hospitals were not too bad as far as being under attack or that's probably the safest place to be. We had some scary moments, but nothing anywhere near what the infantrymen and the grunts had to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
It was always, when I signed up with the Army Student Nurse Corps, that was the farthest thing from my mind. I really didn't think that was I didn't really think about it.
Mm-hmm.
I was too busy trying to get into through nursing school.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You said your twin brother was there?
Right.
At the same time, was that something that you could have protested?
We could have, yeah, but all it would have done was eventually it would just it would have delayed my going to Vietnam, and I wanted to go and get back, and so we only overlapped about 3.5 months.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the Air Force, he was in enlisted Air Force, and so we decided that for the 3-month period of time, it was mm-hmm. We would take the chance and just, we were both fairly safe.
Mm-hmm.
He was not in the field, and I knew I wasn't going to be in the field.
Mm-hmm. And what did you say your assignments were in the wards in Vietnam?
I worked in the medicine ward, took care of
malaria.
A lot of tropical diseases, malaria, heat exhaustion, blackwater fever. We took care of some civilians. I did that for about 2.5 months, and then I was selected. I asked if I wanted to go to the emergency room, and I decided that was something I wanted to do.
Uh-huh.
I felt like I was contributing a little bit more if I worked in the emergency room, and it worked out very, very well from my particular standpoint.
And you got the patients
in the emergency room? They came in, either they came directly from the field or they came in from a med station into our facility. The helicopter pad was right outside the front door of the emergency room. They came in and we triaged them,
mm-hmm.
Depending on the severity of their illness. And then we triaged them the appropriate physicians were called, and the appropriate treatment was provided.
Mm-hmm. Was triage difficult?
It was very difficult. I think probably the biggest thing is that in the military we have 3 or 4 different categories of levels of wounded, and the worst is expectant, where they're alive, but really not much you can do for them. You could spend all your resources on this one individual when you could probably be taking care of other people who are not seriously wounded and make sure that they would have a better chance for survival.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to put our expectants over in the corner, and mostly head wounds. Used to put them in a corner and just put a screen around them, and they would just essentially be left to die. And sometimes it took a long time. It took 3-4 hours sometimes. And that's one of the things I remember vividly from my experience, is that particular aspect of it. There's something that you understood the rationale behind it, but it still is a bothersome to you.
Mm-hmm.
We had many mass cal situations while I was there, taking care of 15 to 30 patients at one time, at night times with a corpsman and myself, and that was, it felt good afterwards that we were able to accomplish what we needed to accomplish and do good for the patients that we had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I was adequately trained for that, both in my nursing school and in the military.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we did a lot of different things. If you talk to anybody else in Vietnam, they did a lot of things, medical things that they would not be allowed to do back in the civilian world, just because everybody raised their level of practice. General surgeons became neurosurgeons, you know,
mm-hmm.
orthopedic surgeons became general surgeons, oral surgeons became anesthetists, just because that's what they had to do at that particular time. And we ended up suturing and putting chest tubes in and intubating. Even though that wasn't in our job description at that particular
mm-hmm.
time, but it was something that was asked of you and you did, and you felt good about doing those types of things. And that, again, formed a good foundation for the rest of my medical and military career.
Mm-hmm.
And it made a lot of friends. A lot of the people that I were stationed with, a lot of them did stay in, and we kept in touch throughout all the years. We were stationed together later on, and you felt good working with them, because you know that they were good people. They were competent individuals, competent neurosurgeons, competent nurses, and you know that they would, if something came up, they could do it. They could handle it without much of a problem at all. So
mm-hmm.
It was a good confidence builder for me
mm-hmm.
from that standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And were there other male nurses at your hospital?
There was lots of male nurses. The other nurse that was in nursing school with me was also, I came into the Army in the Army Student Nurse Program. Here I was stationed at the same hospital, the 24th and back. My roommate, who was in basic with me, was my roommate in Vietnam. There's probably 25-30 male nurses. There was the 24th Evacuation Hospital, and right across the street to the 74th Field Hospital, which is a POW hospital for all Vietnamese, South Vietnamese, or North Vietnamese soldiers, and that was an all-male unit. So there was like 12 or 15 males
mm-hmm.
right there, so, and their hooches were right next to ours. So there were a lot of nurses in the emergency room, on the wards, nurse anesthetists in the intensive care units, and across the street at the 74th Field Hospital. And then right down the street, there was another hospital called the 93rd Vac, which was a psychiatric hospital. And back then in 1968, most of the nurses that were male nurses went into psychiatry. Mm-hmm. For some reason, that was a more acceptable. If you're going to be a male nurse, I guess you were better off to be a psych nurse rather than a ward nurse. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people that I knew in my nursing school and other nursing schools ended up being psych nurses, because mm-hmm. It seemed better for them, I think, in the image of being a male nurse. Mm-hmm. Just like if you're going to be a male nurse, it's probably better to be a nurse anesthetist from the standpoint of it distinguishes you, but it distinguishes you in a different way, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of them were in psych. So there's the 93rd Vac Hospital, which was a large preponderance of male nurses there too. So there's again, there was a big population, but my environment was fairly small and structured, and there were a lot of, mm-hmm. you know, there were a lot of female nurses. All my bosses, let's see, first, probably for the first five assignments in the Army were all females. Mm-hmm. But it was something that I was fairly comfortable with. When you go to nursing school with 28 nurses, female nurses, you get kind of comfortable. And, mm-hmm. and I never really had any major issues as far as being male or female. I don't think I was ever treated unfairly because I was a male. Mm-hmm. I think sometimes I probably was given more assignments because I was male, and males may have done the better or more suited for that particular type of environment or that work. But for the most part, I can't think of anything. I was never really had any biases against by female nurses. Mm-hmm. We were well accepted.
Mm-hmm. And what were some of the positions you said you thought you were given or pushed a certain direction?
I think sometimes working in orthopedic wards, because it's more manually intensive, mm-hmm. and those types of things. That's probably just one example. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, it's not a problem.
Uh-huh. And in Vietnam, were you given different jobs because you were men? Or?
No, I don't think so. When I came to Vietnam, I was given the opportunity when you come into Vietnam, you fly into Benoit Air Force Base, and then you go to a replacement center. And at the replacement center, then they determine which hospital it's a 99th replacement center. And then you determine what hospital you're going to go to. Mm-hmm. I had the opportunity to work to go to an all-male unit, take care of POWs in the northern part of South Vietnam. Mm-hmm. And it's something I really didn't want to do. I really wanted to be more about to take care of GIs. And so the other opportunity was to work at the 24th of Vac, where I had knew some, my nursing school associate was there, mm-hmm. my roommate basic was there, so I chose that. Mm-hmm. Mainly I did not want to go to take care of POWs. Mm-hmm. Even though it was an all-male unit, that didn't bother me so much, it's just that I didn't want to take care of POWs. Mm-hmm. So I decided to go to the 24th of Vac. Mm-hmm. But my initial assignment was they wanted all males take care of the POWs. Uh-huh. So I don't know why. I don't know. I think it may have just been, I don't know, uh-huh. just because of the way the hospital was structured. It was a prison, but it was a hospital also, uh-huh. type of thing. And you have to ask somebody else in the leadership uh-huh. back then. There was, like I said, the 74th Field Hospital was an all male unit, uh-huh. and the unit that I was going to go to in the north. Part of South Vietnam was an all-male, you know, take care of POWs, mm-hmm. and I really didn't want to do that.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever, did they ever expect you to carry a weapon or maybe to stand guard if
no, not, there was not, a threat? Not, or? Not back then. Mm-hmm. It was not expected.
Uh-huh. And did they ever send you, out on, maybe on the helicopter to pick up wounded in the fields or go out?
We did some what we called MedCAPS, Medical Civilian Aid Program, where uh-huh. we went out, but it was both the males and females went out. Uh-huh. Nothing.
Not going into the landing zone or anything to pick up wounded.
Yeah.
Did you ever hear of that happening?
Well, if you talk to people that were in actual, I was in an evacuation hospital, which is a fairly fixed facility. We did not move. We could not mm-hmm. move. It would take us a month to move our. But the field hospitals, those individuals did probably a lot more of those types of things than I did. Uh-huh. But I was in a fixed facility, so it was not expected for us to do those types of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've just heard that sometimes you know, women weren't supposed to get on helicopters and go out and pick up wounded in the field, right. But the men nurses were allowed, and
that may, it's that,
combat.
Yeah, that may have happened, but I don't think it was a, I have never experienced that. I was the only, at that time, when I was in the emergency room, I was the only male there, and all the rest were females, and it changed a little bit later on after I got there for a while, but most of them, and they, we did the exact same thing. We pulled the same shifts. We did the exact same job. There's no, the only difference is if we had female casualties come in, they wanted a female chaperone. That's probably the only thing that I can think of, that especially if there were females on staff that had some type of illness, they would rather have a female chaperone than a male chaperone. That was the only thing I can think of that would be differentiated between males and females as far as nursing goes.
And so you lived in the male quarters with the doctors and
right. And
dentists and
right.
The
females
things,
were on the other side of the compound. It was all male environment on one side and all females on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
We had separate shower facilities. When I first got there, we didn't have any showers. We just had big rain barrels, so we took showers and stuff. But after about 6 months, we got modern plumbing and so forth. And we did have an officer's club, mm-hmm. and that's where most people gathered afterwards to socialize.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not a lot of socialization when you're working 12-hour days, 6 or 7 days a week. It was,
mm-hmm.
you'd go home, you sleep, and time to wake up the next day. But we did have an officer's club, and we did people socialize. We did have barbecues and things like that.
Mm-hmm. And were there strict, was it strictly enforced that the enlisted and officers weren't to socialize or fraternize?
Not quite as much as in 1968, when I came in active duty, it was very, very frowned upon. In the stateside, but in Vietnam, we had a lot more fraternization with the enlisted people.
Mm-hmm.
When I was on the medicine ward, one of my corpsmen was a lawyer, board certified lawyer. He, at that time, if you came in and you're drafted, you only had to serve 2 years. You came in as an officer, you had to serve 3 years, and he didn't want to serve 3 years. So he came in as an enlisted person just because his obligation time would be shorter.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a professional person, he's my age, he's from the same area that I grew up. But he happened to be an E4 and I was a second lieutenant or first lieutenant. And so we did fraternize. It wasn't, as long as you didn't make it really obvious or get into problems or trouble with that, it was kind of, people looked the other way.
Mm-hmm.
We used to go to their hooches to talk and things like that, but not as in the stateside at that time was pretty well frowned upon to have any type of fraternization with the enlisted. Although as a second lieutenant, the people that taught us the most were the enlisted people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the NCOICs or my NCOIC in Vietnam was a master sergeant in Yate who. He had 20-some years experience as a corpsman in the Army. He knew
mm-hmm.
how to do everything.
Mm-hmm.
But he was a very good mentor for us, for me anyways.
Mm-hmm.
The chief nurse was a very good chief nurse. I had two chief nurses while I was there. They were very, very, very good. They were very, very fair. I think, recognized your potential and kind of, it would have been very easy for me to stay in the medicine ward for 12 months. It was something that mm-hmm. it was pretty easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
To go to the emergency room was a big step for me. It's a lot more responsibility. And the chief nurse felt that I was capable of it. She said, go ahead and try. And it worked out very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
So they provided a lot of guidance and leadership for me. And the hospital commander was a neurosurgeon. And he was very, very supportive. So. I didn't have a major problems dealing with females or biases as far as assignments go. But I was treated very, very fairly
mm-hmm.
overall, being a minority in a nursing profession.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. And did the nurses, did any of the men nurses date any of the female nurses
mm-hmm.
or any
yeah.
of that happen?
There was things change when you're in a stressful situation to work closely with somebody 12 hours a day for years, year at a time. It just, things happen. Mm-hmm. So it's that was, we had enlisted people. Donna Call, who is Pieces of My Heart, that's the name of the mm-hmm. book, Pieces of My Heart. Donna Call is, her name is, that was her maiden name, I'm trying to give her married name. She dated an enlisted person over there, and that was kind of frowned upon because mm-hmm. she was seriously dating, and then they get married. So they had to be very, very discreet about their relationship. He was a corpsman on the ward, and she was one of the nurses on the ward.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a particular problem for her mm-hmm. overall.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But if it was another officer, then it was okay.
I think it was another officer. There's the problem if the officer was married. Nurses dated physicians mm-hmm. While they were over there. Just most of the time, if it was discreet, people didn't really say too much about it.
Mm-hmm. And were most of the male nurses older than the female nurses?
No, most of them about the same age, I guess. I'm trying to think. My head nurse was maybe 2 years older than I was. So she was a female. She was dating a physician. We had some Red Cross nurses there. They were dating some males. Male nurses, they were all about the same age.
Mm-hmm.
There was not a lot of difference between the hospital commander, who was in 05 or 06, he was probably 35 years old, and I was 21 or 22. There was not a lot of age disparity back then.
Mm-hmm.
To me, it seems, in my particular institution, that the chief nurse was in 05. She may have been 35 or 40 years of age, but other than that, everybody else was about the same age,
mm-hmm.
Give or take 5 or 6 years,
mm-hmm.
one way or the other. The corpsmen were the same age as the officers.
Uh-huh.
Maybe a little bit older. Some of the NCOICs were older.
Mm-hmm.
They've been in the Army for a long period of time. But overall, there's not a really a wide age disparity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And where exactly was the 24th Evac? And was it further south? Or
it was in the South Vietnam was divided into four corps. First and second corps was in the northern part. Third and fourth corps was in the southern part. Long Bay was in the 3rd Corps, which was in the kind of lower middle part of Vietnam. We were about 30 miles from Saigon,
mm-hmm.
And it was the headquarters of MACV, which is the Military Air Command, Military Army Command. There it was a big installation. It was a very, very big installation. They were big enough to have two hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
They had a big jail, Long Bay Jail, where all the soldiers who got in trouble in Vietnam were imprisoned. So it was a very, very, very big place. There were several officers' clubs.
Mm-hmm.
There were a lot of high-ranking individuals there. So we had a big perimeter, and we did have problems with attacks every once in a while, but they were very, very low-key.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, like I said, our facility was fixed. We had air conditioners. We had Quonset hut-type facilities. We didn't live in tents.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, they had been there for a couple of years. So it was pretty well entrenched in the a lot of modern conveniences. People get very resourceful, and they can fix up the hooch that I had another male nurse, a classmate in basic, who was twice as big as this room. We knocked down some walls and some things, so we had a lot of creativity to do things. So living conditions for the first couple of months, because we didn't have any showers, real showers was a problem, but after that, everybody adapts pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You had mama-sans that did your clothes every day, mm-hmm. washed your clothes and uniform, and had the PX there. Everything was very cheap. And mm-hmm. beer and whiskey, whatever you wanted to drink, was very, very cheap. And so it was, other than being in a war, wasn't
mm-hmm.
bad.
Mm-hmm. And was drinking a kind of pastime? Or was
I think so. I think a lot of people drink more than they normally did.
Mm-hmm.
Drink for 10 cents a piece, 25 cents a piece. And when you did have free time, you kind of wanted to unwind. So I think, and from my own perspective, anecdotally, I can't give you names and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
I know I drank more while I was there than I ever did before
mm-hmm.
or since. A lot of people may have developed drinking problems over there. They may have had drinking problems before they came over and just got exacerbated, because it was mm-hmm. very, very rationed. You could buy scotch, whatever you wanted. It was not a a big thing for us mm-hmm. to get whiskey was there. So I think some people develop problems. I cannot recall anybody having any problems with being able to do their job. Mm-hmm. I don't remember anybody ever being relieved. Again, I was very low on the totem pole of things as a second lieutenant and the first lieutenant over there. But I can't recall any of my colleagues ever being relieved of duty for anything mm-hmm. of that nature.
Mm-hmm. And what about drugs? That was drugs there sort of
yeah,
later.
Drugs was there. I was in the working in the emergency room. One of the things that I was asked to do was commanders would come in with troops who they suspected of being under the influence of drugs, who were on guard duty and so forth, and we were asked to observe them and make some observations and draw blood. And sometimes we had to testify in court with our court martial that these individuals had slurred speech, their pupils were dilated or whatever. Mm-hmm. So drugs were a problem. I know the list of people smoked marijuana. We had lots of overdoses, drugs. Vietnamese type drugs were prevalent very easily. We got lots of Vietnamese people in with overdose of drugs. We got soldiers with overdose of drugs. Again, the psychiatric hospital was right there, so they got a lot of those particular patients also. So drugs were prevalent. My first exposure to drugs in the Army, I went to a party at Port Orford, California in 1968, and there was marijuana there. I never had smelled marijuana before. I didn't know what it was. Per se, drugs was not a problem when I grew up. It was in my hometown, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a small town, 3,000 people, that you couldn't do very much without somebody knowing mm-hmm. what you were doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, but that was my first encounter with drugs. Was in the Army at Fort Ord, and it was very prevalent in Vietnam and where I worked, and the soldiers that came into the emergency room.
Mm-hmm. And did you get an R&R during your year?
R&R, once you, we had an in-country R&R, which I went to in Bung Tao, which is on the beach,
mm-hmm.
for about 3 days. And then I went to Japan with my nursing school classmate for a year, for a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it when I left.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people extended for 6 months, and if they extended for 6 months, they got a 30-day leave and back in the States, but then they had to come back to Vietnam for another 6 months. A lot of people did that.
Mm-hmm.
There were a couple people that were on their second tours that had been there earlier
mm-hmm.
and then come back again. But predominantly, most of the people were first-timers, and we did have an in-country R&R and an out-of-country R&R.
Mm-hmm. And did you consider re-enlisting?
I thought about it, but I was engaged, and that would not have gone over very well. At that time, I probably formulated that that's what I wanted to do, is go to anesthesia school, because
mm-hmm.
I admired their skills, I admired what the respect they got from physicians and other nurses, and that kind of was something that intrigued me, and that's probably when I formulated that I wanted to go back. And I knew I wanted to go to school in the Army, first of all, because I would get paid while I was going to school, but the Army school was the best in the country
mm-hmm.
at that time, and still is a very good school today, but it was something that I wanted to do, so that would just prolong things.
Mm-hmm.
The chances of me going back to Vietnam as a nurse anesthetist were there, but by the time I graduated, things were starting to kind of wind down a little bit. I graduated in 72, I think we were out of there in 75.
Mm-hmm. And so they could have sent you back because your MOS had changed.
Changed, right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And you said your wife was also a nurse anesthetist?
No, she's a nurse. She and I went to nursing school together.
Okay.
Her father was a nurse, was my instructor in nursing school. And her uncle was a nurse anesthetist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of I observed him once or twice doing anesthesia. So I knew what it was a little bit about. I hadn't formulated in my mind that's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
But when I got to Vietnam, and the people that lived next to me were nurse anesthetists, and it was something that I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm. And so you got married when you got home.
Then. Right.
And then was the Army pretty good about keeping your wife with you?
Yeah, there were several assignments I did not ask for. I mean, I did not ask to go to Fort Polk, Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
I did not ask to go to Fort Huachuca. But they turned out to be the best assignments in the Army. Again, I had I had no problems. I essentially got what I asked for. I may not have got it exactly when I wanted it, but I got it eventually. I got turned down the first time to go to long-term civilian schooling, and I was a little upset about it because I worked really hard and I thought I deserved it, but I was just too young in the Army, and they were not willing to chance sending me to school, and I wasn't as approving the commodity then as I was a year later.
Mm-hmm.
But that worked out fine.
Mm-hmm.
I got everything I asked for and more. It's amazing that as I came as a second lieutenant, I never thought it would be in 06 and have the positions that I had later on in my career and the influence I had on other people. One of my proudest career moments is I spent 9 years, almost 9 years in the school and educated over almost 360 nurse anesthetists. So I can't go any place in any hospital in the United States and not know somebody that knows somebody, or I know somebody. It's a good feeling from that standpoint. So I was very, very, and I could never envision myself being in that position if I had not been in the Army,
mm-hmm.
and given the opportunities that I was given. The downside is that my kids don't know the grandparents very well. My kids don't know their cousins very well. Like, I knew my cousins and my
mm-hmm.
grandparents because we moved to Lamoureux. I moved 17 times in 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
But my wife sometimes regrets that she couldn't be home more often, but overall, it's not, I don't look back at that particular aspect of it. It really did provide an education and home and shelter for my kids,
mm-hmm.
and my wife.
Mm-hmm. And she was in civilian nursing.
She was a civilian nurse, and uh-huh. she just retired about a year and a half ago. She worked mainly as a maternal child nurse for a while, and then she worked in a maternal child clinic taking care of teen pregnancies here in San Antonio. San Antonio is one of the biggest cities, and one of the cities has the largest population of teen pregnancy, and that's what she did. She counseled teen through their perinatal period, and she just retired about a year and a half ago. Just works part-time now at a bookstore at Barnes & Noble's a couple of days a week.
Mm-hmm.
We've been here since 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And
That's a long time for you guys.
I retired in 97, so it's unusual for me because I spent essentially 15 years in one assignment.
Mm-hmm.
In one place, I had many different assignments.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, we move around every 3 years. And I did that initially for the first 16, 17 years. I moved 14 times.
Mm-hmm.
It's not been I don't have many regrets as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How do you think your military nursing career compared to her civilian nursing career?
She got a BS degree, she got a master's degree, but she had to do it on her own. We had to pay for it. She's a lot smarter than I am. She could have been an instructor. She could have been she could have had a PhD, but I think she did a lot of the sacrifices that other people did at that time. They got married and they sacrificed their careers for their kids.
Mm-hmm.
We were fortunate enough that she was able to be home while our kids were growing up,
mm-hmm.
and that's a rarity nowadays. But she was able to get her education too. We were able to make enough money that she was able to go back to school and get her master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I think she sacrificed her career aspirations so that I could have mine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that she could have become more than she were actually, but I think she's fairly happy
mm-hmm.
from that standpoint. At one time she wanted to join the Army, and I discouraged her because I didn't think she had the mental capabilities or had the right attitude for it.
Mm-hmm.
Now we kick ourselves because we had 2 05s or 06 mm-hmm. retirements, and we really would have to work.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. She made a lot of sacrifices moving around.
Mm-hmm.
And it took her a long time to get her master's degree,
mm-hmm.
just because we had kids and moved down
mm-hmm.
so much.
Yeah, and you said you never really had the problems with PTSD or flashbacks.
No, I sometimes I feel guilty because I don't have it, I think I'm fairly well adjusted from that particular aspect of it. At the VA, I work with the majority of our patients with PTSD, and I can see the damage that can do and the long-term effects from our World War II veterans who, when they really didn't know what PTSD was, to now we're starting to get some Iraqi freedom veterans in, and the Korean and the Vietnam War I can relate to very, very well. But I don't have any dreams, I don't have any problems, I don't have any guilt. I think the main thing is because I stayed in the Army and I was able to talk about a lot of these things and talk about, even when we get together downstairs with John Gervin and some of the other people I've known for 30 years. Mm-hmm. I knew them when I first came in the Army. And we talk about our war experiences over beer or something. I think that's therapeutic from that standpoint. And I talked to Donna Call and Kate Johnston. They did not have that opportunity, and they came back to an environment that was hostile to them. They came back to the civilian world. They came from very, very small towns, similar to where I came from, very small towns in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. Came from a small town in New York. Our education was essentially the same. We simply went to the same basic class, we went to the same hospitals, went to the Vietnam at the same time. But I think one of the reasons why is because I stayed in and was able to build on my experiences and keep building on that, mm-hmm. where I don't know if they had that experience, mm-hmm. you know, from that standpoint. And I was able to talk about it. And I was rewarded for my Vietnam experience. It opened some doors for me to get to anesthesia school and mm-hmm. so forth, where they may not have been awarded for the experience, but it was a black marketing if you were in Vietnam and that type of thing. and we talked about it a long time, and I still have a hard time. I can understand their feelings, but it's hard, and I can empathize with them. But I just don't know how they came to that particular conclusion. Mm-hmm. I'm not a psych nurse. I never wanted to be a psych nurse. There's something I never wanted to do. And more of an instant gratification. That's one nice thing about anesthesia or the emergency room. A patient comes in, you take care of them, and they're gone. We're in a medical ward or surgical ward, you have to take care of them 4, 5, 6 weeks, sometimes longer. Mm-hmm. And so my personality is such that you see a task, you do it well, and then you go on to the next task. And that benefited me. That's why I think I went to the emergency room and did a fairly good job, and that's why I think I stayed in anesthesia, mm-hmm. because it fit my personality more.
Yeah.
Maybe they were assigned positions that didn't fit the personality as well as mine did.
Mm-hmm.
I know that the wards that they worked on, especially if you read Kathy Johnston's experiences, she worked on a surgical oral maxillofacial ward, and they really had some very, very bad patients. I mean, mm-hmm. I think that if I didn't see the long-term effects. I saw them in the emergency room, and that was it. I never had to visit them on the ward. I never had to see them very much after their initial experience that I had, where they had to deal with them for 3 or 4 or 5 days or 2 weeks until they were stable. And that may have affected me. Now that I think about it, maybe that's one of the reasons why I didn't have quite as much of problems as they did, because I didn't have to deal with it as long-term as they did. Sure, I had patients came in, they were amputated, they had, you know, cricothyroidotomies, they had bad head wounds and so forth, but they came and they were gone so quickly. Mm-hmm. And so, that probably is, and you end up being detached anyways when you go there. That's one of the ways you survive, is by being detached. But I think mine was a lot easier to do because they physically were detached before Kathy Johnston and Donna had to deal with them for a longer term.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess everybody's experiences are very different.
Yeah, it is. I said, when I read the books the first couple of times, I said, God, I was there. I don't understand it. I just don't understand it. But everybody is different, and everybody has different makeups. And
mm-hmm.
I think both of them still have recurring problems, but it's not as bad as they initially had.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now, back in 1969, when we came back, they really had put a name on it, mm-hmm. PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas 10 years later, I think they did, and I think that's when they started getting some healing. And
mm-hmm.
We all, the dedication of the Women's Memorial,
mm-hmm.
I was up here on a trip for the Army, and I was able to, and we had a 24th of the back portion of the dedication that we marched, and that's where I met all these people that I hadn't seen in
mm-hmm.
in probably about 20 years.
Uh-huh.
And so that was a good time. It was kind of like healing for a lot of different people. I think that was something that they needed from their particular perspective of trying to heal their wounds and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And what did you think about the memorial?
I thought it was well deserved. I mean,
there isn't a male nurse.
Yeah,
at the memorial.
I think it's interesting. We were just talking about this a couple of days ago. We had a golf tournament, and John Gervin and Charlie Reddy and General Bester were playing together. And Charlie was my first supervisor in Hawaii in 1970. But we both came in, and when we came in, we were designated as MN. Nurses came in as N or MN, mm-hmm. as male nurse or nurse. And we were automatically signaled out by the Army when we came in as MN or N. Why do you think they did that? Because there are certain assignments or certain roles that male nurses were assigned to where nurses weren't assigned to, and the way they could designate that was by looking at your social security or your ID number.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's something that probably set us apart when we first came in. Now everybody has theirs, and there are very few jobs that a male can't do that a female nurse can't do, or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting that in the Army, in the nursing anesthesia field, there's still there are about 50% of the nurse anesthetists are male and 50% are female. When I came in, they were probably still more predominantly female, but it's changed over the years as a male nurse population and civilian and the overall has changed. So has the mm-hmm. Nurse anesthesia, but it's still about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is probably some differentiation by the Army when they gave us those two particular numbers, MN versus N.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot what your original question was now.
About the memorial.
I thought it was something that was very, very beneficial. I did not feel slighted whatsoever that it was females. I accept that we are in the minority. I think the female nurses, except I don't know, I have not known many male nurses have had PTSD problems.
Mm-hmm.
I really have not. I mean, that I know personally, and I know a lot of nurses, and a lot of male nurses that were in that time.